In His Voice podcast, hosted by me, Rob L. Lowe, where we talk about those things that deeply impact the lives of boys to men. Everything from the bedroom to the boardroom, from the playground to the stadium, and everything in between. And before we get into today's show, remember to do this. Remember to like, subscribe, and share. And go ahead and hit that bell button so you can get the latest updates from the podcast. And thank you for tuning in. All right, today's episode, man, we're in season two. If you saw last week's episode, I hope you got something out of it. This week's episode is really special for me because it's a topic that we don't discuss often. And I'm saying I'm happy because this is my first episode where I actually have female guests on. And we're going to talk about a variety of topics as relates to young men, young boys, and also men. As you know, we don't bash women. We don't bash men on our show. So if that's what you're looking for, this is not the format. But we really do want to have a meaningful discussion. And so I have two guests on the show. And today's topic, we're going to talk about the impact of changes in relationships, primarily around divorce, and how that potentially impacts the lives of young boys, and maybe even how they grow to impact them as men. And so, welcome to my show today. I have two guests. I want to welcome Amanda and
Janita.
And Janita. Okay, so do you go by Anjanita or short? I'm gonna call you Anjanita, but
I go by Angel sometimes, but when I'm in my other spaces, I go by my government.
All right, so on the show I have Angel or Anjanita and Amanda. And so this is really cool how this came about because Amanda, I put a post out there and I said, you know, I'm looking for some females who want to be on the podcast to talk about, you know, things that impact the lives of boys and men. And you were like, yeah, cool. Like I'm willing to be on the show. So then we talk. And when you open up about, you know, I'm divorced. I have two sons. You have daughters too, right? Mm-hmm. But yep. We talked about the two sons. And you was like, yeah, I'd love to be on the show. And I was like, hey, well, make sure you bring somebody with you because I think it's definitely a more enriched conversation. So I got to ask you a couple questions. And then, Angelita, I'm going to ask you some questions too. As you see, this is all unscripted.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So don't worry. I'm not going to ask anything crazy. But I do the podcast unscripted because I really want it to be natural for people.
Okay.
What made you want to be on the show?
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
And second of all, I think in my experience, we don't get enough conversation about what's really going on in our homes and in our communities.
Yeah.
And we have been really conditioned to be very superficial. It's, you know, there's not enough black men in the home, or too many people are getting divorced, or our people don't want to get married, or, you know, whatever it is, or, oh, it's mental health. Oh, it's these superficial issues without really getting into the root causes of the issues.
Yeah.
And even being super honest in our community that yeah. some of these issues are not only generational, but we breed them.
Yeah.
We allow them.
Yeah.
We accept them.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the hard work, and that's having conversations. That are hard conversations that might hurt, but then also having those conversations together as mothers, brothers, sisters, aunties, uncles, and cousins and nems, you have some hard conversations.
Cousin and nems. All right. The fact you just started this off, this is great because this question is for you. Or it's more or less, I'd like to get your thoughts. So we'll get into the divorce and how it impacts, you know, your sons. But one of the things I notice on social media, one of the things I literally notice is, man, there's this trend, man, that we bash men and women. And really, particularly black people, we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I mean is, if you go see a post and someone says, hey, get you a woman who is a queen, uplift her, treat her right, get your woman who does these things, don't do these things, you'll get some men who'll be like, absolutely, that's, you know, let me say it differently. If you have a woman that goes on the internet and says, look, you need to take care of your man, get a man who does this and they deserve this, blah, blah, you'll get a bunch of men who go, absolutely, she's speaking right, listen to her. Mm-hmm. You'll get a bunch of women be like, they ain't jacking. They just saying this, girl, you don't know, I don't believe you, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You get a man who go in there and say, listen, if you got a woman, you need to be this, you need to do this for her, you need to treat her this way, you need to do, and you'll get women who go, like, absolutely right, he's right, all these men don't listen, and then you'll get men like, dude, you crazy because they this, they that, they this, and you go, and I look at it and I go, how do we take somebody who says something positive,
mm-hmm.
and then we project on them onto them our own negative experience, because that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Somebody will read something positive and be like, that was my experience with men, or that was my experience with women. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to generalize everyone else. And I bring that up, Angelique, because I want to get your thoughts. Do you have children?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I have two kids. My kids are good and grown.
And sons or daughters?
I have one son, one daughter.
Okay, so this is perfect. Mm-hmm. So knowing that you have a son and a daughter, did you raise them the same? Was it different trying to raise a son versus a daughter? And how do you prepare them for healthy relationships when they get older?
Well, if you ask my kids, it was definitely different.
Okay.
My daughter would say that I was a bit more hovering more over her than I did my son.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, if you haven't had any healthy relationships, you really don't know what a healthy relationship is. The only thing that you know is what you've been through. So that's why when you see these posts online and they're all generalized like that,
yeah,
it's because a lot of people's experience goes more towards the negative than the positive. And I think that when things like relationships end, that we tend to hang on to the negative aspects of their relationship and don't think about the good that actually came out of the relationship, right?
Yeah.
So when it came to talking to my son and my daughter about relationships, the one thing that I try to instill in them is to always be who they are and to make sure that they maintain certain boundaries for relationships. Like, if there's something that you don't want to do, then don't do that. You know, and make sure that you stand your ground on that. And I think that with a lot of people, they want to be in relationships so bad, they're looking for love so bad, and looking for it so much that they start overlooking certain flags because they want this relationship, they want this love, and then when it ends up not being what they hope it to be, then that's when we get all these negative connotations and things like that. And I also think that when it comes to raising boys and girls, in theory, it sounds real good to raise them the same.
Yeah.
Because the bottom line is we're all human.
Yeah.
And so we all experience the same human emotions. And I think that if we take out the whole idea of, I'm going to raise my boy this way, I'm going to raise my daughter that way, and just say, I'm going to raise my kids this way, I think that that will alleviate a lot of the things that we go through in relationships as well. Because I think the gender roles are really blurred the lines about what a man should do and what a woman should do.
Yeah.
As an adult person, you should be able to at least take care of yourself and take care of the things you need to take care of.
You know, it's amazing you say that, because negativity and trash is what sells. It's what clicks. It's what gets content on social media. I post positive stuff. You know, I'll get some views, but if I post something negative and bash women or bash men, say something controversial, is going to take off. Raising sons, so both of you have sons. And like I said, I'm coming to the relationship piece. But having sons, was there a shift in how you parented your son? So at a certain age, did you parent them a certain way? And then when they got to be teenagers, did you change, or was it always the same? Because, you know, as a young man, in my book, I talk about, I lost my mom at the age of 7, right? And 6 months before that, I saw my stepfather get killed. So I grew up with my sisters. We were raised by our grandparents, but I got a grandparent's love. I didn't get a mother's love. right? And it's very different. I got a grandparents' love who was amazing, but my grandmother raised me with a bunch of other grandkids around, right? So me and my sisters lived there, but there was always somebody else there. And so I grew up with this emptiness, but then I have a lot of female friends and family members who have sons, and I can't help but just, I cringe sometimes, because I just feel like, and I could be absolutely wrong, but I just go like, yo, no, that ain't, at that age, that ain't what he needs. Mm-hmm. So I'm making a generalization, but for you as a mother of sons, was there a period, and what did that look like?
So I think I want to.
Let's go. Right. Let's go.
All right. So I don't know if I told you this in our conversation, but my mother died when I was 9.
Oh, bless you, bro.
And I'm named after my grandmother. So my grandmother's name was Amanda. My name is Amanda.
Okay.
I was then, I have two brothers by my mother, so biological brothers. By the time me and my two brothers went to live with my grandmother, and my two brothers are younger than me, there were already 8 other cousins living with her because 2 of her other daughters had already died. So my grandmother had her own 7 kids and then raised 12 of
So how many grandkids. Was in the house when you were there?
Oh, see, now that don't, see, you talking about how many grandkids now. Living there, 12.
Living there, 12. I'm 12. Just, man.
All my first cousins, including my, and then my 2 brothers. But we have, you know, a rotation of family in and out of that house.
Yeah, that was our house.
And so, my grandmother.
My cousin Gail knows she's producing, but she absolutely knows that was our house.
Yep. So, my family is from, Grenada, Mississippi. Grandmother and grandfather. And we lived off of 40th and Arlington back in the early, late 80s, early 90s. So back then, that was middle class.
Yeah, it was.
And we were that family that had a whole bunch of kids and people living in the house.
Yeah.
But nobody knew who was actually who. And we didn't have all the things everybody else had, but everybody wanted to be at our house. All right. We had the home cooked meal.
Lit.
We had the home cooked meal. We was the kids that couldn't go in the front yard ever. If you wanted to talk to us, you had to come in the backyard. And kids that had 2 parents with great jobs was at our house consistently because we had home cooked food and we had great kickball games.
Okay. Where'd you go to school? Arlington?
Yep.
And you lived off of 40th and?
Okay. 40th and Catherwood, right? So 40th and Arlington.
So, because my aunt lived off of 39th and Sheridan.
Okay.
So I hung out over there. I went to 94.
Yep.
And so I don't know when you came out of high school, but a lot of my friends grew up in that area. I hung out over there all the time.
Yep.
One of my closest friends grew up over there off of Sawyer.
Yep. So, as you were telling your story, it brought up a lot of actually some things I had not thought about saying, but I'm going to say, a grandmother's love, a grandparent's love is just untouchable.
Yeah.
And there are, and like, there's a whole host of us, me and my cousins. And, I always say we have been through some of the most trauma. And when we tell our stories, people feel sorry for us, but we also say it's also what's made us who we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as it relates to children, my children, I have 5, 3 girls and 2 boys.
Okay.
They range from 23 to 16.
Okay.
And due to some of the traumas and things that happened, so my mother and 2 of her sisters all died at the age of 29. So
Hold on. Your mother died at what age?
29.
You know that's the age my mom died.
I didn't know. But 29. She died at 29.
Wow.
Yep. And 2 of her sisters. And so naturally, so looking back now, I didn't even actually come to this realization until about 10 years ago, that I was actually living my life as though I was only going to make it to 29.
Dang.
This was okay. That's so this
Hold on. Listen, you think I'm making this up?
No. Hold on.
In my book, I say I didn't think I was going to live past 30.
And people might find it hard to believe, but when you grow up, I think there's some subconscious things that get planted in your subconscious that you're not aware of. And not only that, the people that you've been entrusted to are not equipped to help you deal or even notice with those things that you are holding into. They don't even know how to find out. Honestly, I think when my mom died, then I actually went to live with her youngest sister and her husband, and her husband was about 20 some years older than her. it ended up, it was a very abusive relationship. They, you know, he had the great job. They had the beautiful house. We lived over Basha's heart. We were the only black family. This is 1990s, mid 90s. 3 years later, I think 3 to 4 years later, she dies. One day while he's hitting her, beating her, and me and my two brothers and her two kids.
I'm sorry about that, but I'm glad you clarified when you said he was hitting her.
He was very abusive, very abusive. And this particular day, we jumped on him, and we wasn't taking it no more. We didn't all jump him, and about 2 hours later, we hear a thump, and it was her falling out of the bed, and she had died of a heart attack, also at 29. So that is when we ended up going to live with my grandmother, who my grandmother has been a constant. My grandmother and grandfather were a constant in our lives, always. So went to live with her, which is where I wanted to be. But from that point on, we had a pretty decent upbringing as it relates to, you know, the home life, right?
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things that I seen that, you know, I didn't understand as it relates not just to moving, but even mental illness in our family, functional alcoholism, you know, like the uncles and the aunties that I think are so cool, but then I found out, oh, really, they was on crack, and what I thought was cool was really a evidence of other things.
Have y'all been to our family or something like that? I could have swore y'all just described my childhood, man, and our family life.
No. This is a lot of families, actually. And I think my grandma, which my family and my cousins will tell y'all, she loved me the most. I got away with everything. I was the favorite. I don't think that's the case, but maybe it was. So don't tell none of them that, right? But my grandmother, I really thank her and for always encouraging me to say and do what I felt like saying and doing, even if it was wrong sometimes. And because of that, I was very inquisitive. And to this day, I'm still inquisitive. Like, I want to understand, like, you know, why did my mother and her sisters die at 29? And why didn't nobody do something? And so I had an inkling for healthcare, which is how I ended up in nursing school, to find out these answers. But I'm going to answer your question. As it relates to children, though, I married a man who came from a two-parent household and pretty much probably didn't understand a lot of the things that I went through, although we talked about it. You know, I feel like when you go through so many things and you tell people, they want to empathize with you, but they really can't empathize. They can sympathize because if you've never been through something like it, it's hard for you to empathize. So you're really sympathizing with the person, right?
Yeah.
I say that to say this because when you enter into unions, especially young, you've not been taught to think about these things, right? You hear the quote, don't be unequally yoked. And we're like, huh, well, you go to church. And I go to church. We're yoked.
Well, ain't nothing. That's a crack egg. That's what that is.
And it might not be. It could have been a boiled egg had you been in the care of people who were emotionally equipped to help you walk through and handle some of those things which you had not done yet. And so we got married after we had 4 kids. Then we had a 5th after we were married. And honestly, my upbringing and the accomplishments and the things I had gone through really taught me to want to parent my children in a way that I got to teach them everything I need them to know because I might not be here when I'm 29.
Ooh. So how old were you when you had your first?
20.
And was it a boy or a girl?
A girl.
So you have 3 girls, 2 boys.
Yep.
Are your boys the youngest, oldest, in the middle?
No, my kids are girl, then I have a set of twins. So girl, boy, girl, boy, girl.
Man. And your son, Angelita, oldest or youngest?
He's the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
I had my son when I was 15.
Wow.
And so I was still in high school. I was literally a freshman in high school when I had my son. He's born 5 days after my 15th birthday.
Okay, you both have interesting stories. I don't even know where to begin. Like, seriously, like, this show is going to just go with it. Just trust me on this, all right? Hold that, because I'm coming back to that.
Okay. Right?
You got married.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you married?
7.5 years.
Do you mind, and if you don't want to answer, just say, Rob, I don't want to answer. The guy you married, your children's father?
Yeah.
The divorce and the impact on your children, primarily your sons. What did you see?
So, I believe the impact. Now, if you ask my children right now, which when we got a divorce, they were all under 10. And some of them remember specific things, but the one thing that I remember to a T was the arguing. And if you ask them now, you know, how you, some people probably won't ask it because they'd be like, my mom and dad, I wish they would have never got a divorce. My kids have never said that. They have always been like, whew, it's about time y'all got a divorce. Hold on,
so they were all under 10. So you've been divorced for a while now.
Yeah.
How many years you been divorced?
Since 2012. 2013, actually.
Okay, so you...
Well, we've been separated since 2000. We separated in 2012.
All right, so, you've been separated for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, because they were all under 10, but they remember all of the arguments.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about it now, they'd be like, no, we're glad. Like,
oh, yeah.
Your son's in this situation, because sons are like usually protect. There's this bond about mothers and sons, right?
Yep.
Tell me about that. Like, how was the impact on your sons?
Yeah. So, I'm pretty sure I raised all my kids the same, but according to their personalities. And I think what's interesting is none of my kids have a particularly mom relationship nor a particular dad relationship. I'm actually, I think, equally close to all of them, just in a different way.
Yeah.
I have my oldest son who is what we call the gentle giant. He's tall, big guy, you know, but very soft-spoken at times unless you really know him. His girlfriend tells him he's a lot like my mom. He's a lot like me. Like, he's really clear about, you know, straight to the point. Everything is like, you know, white or black. One plus one equals two type of stuff, yeah. Right? Then I have my youngest son who his dad says is just like me. You know, he's all over the place. He's emotional. He's this, he's that. And I think as it relates to me as a parent, and I have to tell you about the sons, I feel like, you know, they had the same upbringing. They have the same, could have had the same relationship with the father. They do have the same father, but they took away different things from their relationship with the father. So I have one son who I will tell you, I think he has taken everything what not to do.
Okay.
And that's how he's operating in life.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, see, that didn't work for you when you did that, so I'm not going to do that.
Uh-huh.
And then I have another son who's like, well, you tell me don't do this, but I see you doing this, this, this. And so he hasn't been able to necessarily, he hasn't, I think their identity matches up more with my youngest son and his dad. And okay. It has caused more of a issue for my son to be able to navigate life, especially as an adult. He's 19 now. And it's really disheartening to watch because.
Yeah, mom, and you're like, man, I don't know the circumstance, but I imagine you're going like, look, but I don't want you to make mistakes. Some mistakes will cost you dearly.
Does
his older brother step in and try to rationalize with him?
He does. And I find myself more so, especially the last year and a half, leaning on my older son.
Yeah.
You know, he's always been a great big brother. All of my kids will tell you that. The voice of reason. But then we get into this point where I feel like, and I've said, you know, to my son and to his dad, actually just a day and a half ago, like, you guys got to figure out, is this really worth it? Right? Like, and I can say to my son, which I did, like, I'm your mother. So I'm asking you if what is going on is worth you being disrespectful, is worth you not talking, is worth you yelling, y'all yelling at each other. Cause if he wasn't here tomorrow, what would you do? Would it be worth it? Would it be worth it? You know, and, you know, I'm having these conversations with him. And then I asked his dad the same thing. And, you know, as parents who don't mature and who don't, and I won't even say mature because I don't think it's maturity. When I say maturity, I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about maturity as it relates to emotions.
Yeah.
Maturity as it relates to communication. Yeah. You know, if you ask somebody what's a good wife or a good husband, they're going to say, somebody that can communicate. But what does that really look like?
Yeah.
What is really communication? Because when you don't say something, you communicate.
What was it like raising your sons versus raising your daughters?
So I feel like my sons were a little easier than some of my daughters, or difficult in other ways, but I'm also I'm a tomboy. I grew up a tomboy.
Okay.
So I was closest with boys, closest with my boy cousins, closest with my uncles growing up.
Yeah.
I think I've always just been that person that, oh, she's a girl, but she cool. She cool.
Yeah.
You know, I've had brothers and cousins that have boy birthday parties and they're like, hey, none of the girls come, but I came, I was there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so I think naturally it was easier for me with the boys. And my girls, I don't think it's been hard. I just think that my ability to relate as much emotionally, not that I'm not emotional, it's just like I've never been the girl that's like crying. Like, oh, I fell and my slipper, my heel broke.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's never been me. You know, so I wasn't the woman that while I was pretty and I was like, oh, I feel my belly kicking. I'm like, when is this coming out of here? Because I got things to do. And, you know, so I think that's why it's been easier. It was easier with my sons, but, I honestly don't think that I raised them. I don't think raising them was different. I just think their personalities require different things
okay.
and I adjusted accordingly, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right. And Angelina, I'm coming back to you. 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a mom, a mom of a son. You know, if you can go back and just tell me whatever you want to share, what was that like when you realized, one, you were pregnant, two, I'm about to have, you know, or two, I just had a son. And then, like, what was that adjustment like for you?
Well, I didn't find out I was pregnant until I was almost 6-7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
So when it hit me, it was definitely a shock because I just really didn't get that things like that would actually happen to me.
Yeah.
Because and I think part of that is because I just wasn't I was sheltered for a big part of my life, and I just really didn't understand, as any teen would at that point, the dynamic between what people in relationships do,
uh-huh.
and how you actually start relationships. So I don't think I really quite understood that. And so when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, it was a total shock because I'm like, really? Like, that really could happen to me? Like, why would that even be a thing? And then on top of that, I was way too far along, so even if I wanted to terminate, I couldn't.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, okay, so you can give the child up for adoption, but I'm not about to go and carry this child mm-hmm. to term and then give my baby to someone else. I just, that part I just couldn't do. So I had to really come to terms with things really, really quickly. And then I was still in high school, and you really couldn't tell that I was pregnant up until maybe the 7 month when I really, really started to show. So I was taken out of school, put on bed rest. And then, and back then I had no idea if it was going to be a girl or a boy because I hadn't the whole ultrasounds and all this stuff really wasn't going on then. So when he was first born, it was difficult because here I am, I'm still trying to figure out who I am.
Yeah.
And now I have to be responsible for a whole other mm-hmm. child. And it's a boy. I mean, I have brothers, you know, I have younger brothers, two younger brothers. And I always was able to, you know, help take care of them and things like that. So I leaned on the experience that I've had as being a big sister to my brothers
mm-hmm.
to get me through to raise my son. So essentially my son grew up with me. So when I graduated high school, he was 3 and he was literally the loudest person in the auditorium. And it was the cutest little thing cause he was like, I'm so proud you graduate. Like he didn't really understand. He knew I had accomplished something.
Yeah.
So, when my son was smaller, like we were very, very close. He was literally like my little sidekick. You know, so I know he saw a lot of things he probably shouldn't have seen.
Yeah.
And I'm watching stuff like Minister Society and Boys in the Hood.
Teenager.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I'm listening to hip hop, you know what I mean? And it's like, as a teenager, I'm not thinking that my son is absorbing all this. Mm-hmm. But my son was smart. Like when I say he was 4 years old and he could, not only could he tell you his ABCs and how to count, he counted to like 200. Wow. He was able to, he knew how to spell. He knew all his colors, knew how to spell his colors. He was very, very smart. Mm-hmm. Very, very smart. Very, very intelligent child. Very, very intelligent. So on that end, I kind of got a little lucky. I got lucky with it. But I also made some really big, really mm-hmm. big snafus when it came to writing.
Hold on just a second, guys.
Okay.
Just put it on like 70. Yeah, there you go.
So I.
Okay.
It's but I made some big things because his father since his father lost access to me after I found out I was pregnant, I was like, okay, so you come to find out his father had three other kids that same year. So my son is the oldest, and then he had three other brothers that year. And I'm like, you know, okay, so you're doing a little much. Like, you know, and I knew about one of the kids. I didn't know about the other two. So I just kind of said, I'm not going to be dealing with that.
Yeah.
Just take care of your kid and we're good.
Yeah.
But because he had lost access to me, he wasn't really there for my son. So I know that this kind of impacted him a lot growing up because he did see, like, his dad would like do things for his little brothers that he would do for him and stuff like that. And part of me was into, because I didn't grow up with my dad, so I really wanted my kids to have their dad in their life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I never closed the door. I never told you can never. I never did any of that.
Yeah.
But because of what my son was seeing and then how his father was being really irresponsible, having kids after kids after kids after kids, you know, that kind of did something to him. And then I think one of the biggest mistakes that I made as a mother was, and this is by the time my daughter was born, he's like 8 years old. So it's me, him, and my daughter. And I give him the title of man of the house. That was probably the biggest mistake that I made when it came to raising my son.
You gave your son the title?
The title of man. He's the only male there.
And how old was he?
He was 8. And I said, well, it's just me, you, and him. Me, you, and your sister. You know, so you're the man of the house. This is what you do as the man of the house.
Yeah.
You take out the trash, you protect the sister, you know, and things like that. But what I didn't realize was how much he took that to heart. So when I did get married, our relationship suffered.
Ooh.
Because at that point, it didn't help that the man I married should not have been the man I married, period.
Okay.
So he wasn't a good man to marry anyway, or somebody that I felt like he could have poured into my son, but he just wasn't able to. And that caused the friction between my son, because now here is a man who is the man of the house. And so, in hindsight,
how old were you when you got married?
I was 12. He was 12 when I got married.
So he was 12. So for 4 years,
he was the man of the house.
I'm the man of the house. I'm your man, right? Like I'm the man of the house. I'm the guy you go to, and now this other man is going to take the position,
taking my spot.
Mm-hmm.
And being in the household with the type of husband that I had, and then having my son who's now heading into being a teenager. You know, it was almost like it was always like a fight between them, and it was always me in the middle of that fight. So, and like, I don't know some of the things they may have gotten into it about.
Yeah.
And I don't know what their conversations were, but I know that it was pretty bad, and it caused a lot of friction. And that period of time when I was married was also the same period of when he's a teenager. So he's trying to figure out who he is and filter all this other stuff. And then he's in this home where he's not he's supposed to fall back into the son role, but he's always been a fierce protector of me ever since he was little. He was always a fierce protector of me. So I think raising him that within itself in hindsight, now that I can actually see, you know, that was probably the point where I really messed up. Because up until then, my son and I were really close. Like, he was, like, very, very good kid, very smart kid, you know, and very inquisitive. And I tried to always foster that sense of things in him.
Yeah.
Very protective, very loving over his sister, all of that. But that time when I got married, it was just a total, it's almost like the light switch went off and my kid was no longer a kid that I recognized. And that period of life is like, if I had to go back and do over, I would definitely do that period, because I think that's the period that sent my son, that changed the trajectory of his actual life.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because in the beginning of this podcast, I talked about, and if you guys see this, I hope you don't take offense to it because it's not personal, but I have female friends and family members who have sons. And they raise them as single moms. And these are wonderful women with the greatest intentions. But there are times I would be like, yeah, you coddling him. No, he can't get that. That ain't what you do. He's got to feel this. And as a man, there were things I could see far off that I couldn't say. I'm like, all right, tell you how this movie gonna end. Cause he didn't get that thing that young boys, it's really weird to say. You know, I'm from a different generation. I was raised by my grandparents, right? But there's this rite of passage that young boys, at least in my generation, who come from two family homes or who come from having male figures in their life. It could be an uncle, it could be a cousin, whatever. But there's this rite of passage that there's this day that you decide you want to act up or talk back, or you walk with your chest out, and that one male figure walks up and be like, today I'm going to mess you up. And you know, it's either I'm going to grab you by your collar, you're going to catch this fish in the chest, you're going to get yanked up and scare you out your socks. Whatever that is, it happens. But when I heard you say, and you're probably the first woman I've ever heard say this, right? I've ever heard say this. And I'm not saying others don't, but you're the first one I've ever heard say that I go back and I look as a mother and realize there was a period. I didn't pay attention to what I was doing that would affect him later in life. I've never heard someone say that.
I had to do it. It takes a lot of being real with yourself, you know, and looking at it. And as I look back, because it's for me, there's a lot of things that I've had to go from. Lot of things.
Yeah.
And going back and trying to figure out, you know, I figure if I can figure out the point where I messed up, then I know that I can atone for that.
Yeah.
Because a few years ago, my son and I weren't even speaking. We had gone about 4 years without even talking to each other. Because of all the frictions and things like that. And then, you know, he had gotten disrespectful to me. And like things like, and I'm like, wait, you know, like, why is this happening? And I know it was a lot that he blamed me for. And I'm not going to say that he didn't have a legitimate reason to not blame me for that. But in hindsight, I see exactly when it happened.
Wow.
And I see the trajectory that it put him on. Now, my son has 7 children.
Yeah.
I see how he's trying to parent his own children and how he's trying to be there for his own children. And I know a lot of that is born out of him not having that in his life, but that's still not without struggle, you know, because now you're dealing with your children's mothers and you're dealing with their things that they need to heal from. And I mean, it's a lot of trauma surrounding all of that. And I think that until, number one, we talk about it and we put it out there, I think it's going to always, that's just something that's going to always be if we cannot talk about it honestly and just be honest with ourselves and like, yeah, I messed up. Yeah, I did do that, you know, and stop saying it wasn't me, your dad,
You also say, but I did it with good intentions. I just didn't realize the repercussions of either things I exposed you to or changes I made, but not recognizing that it was going to impact you. I'm making these changes. Because I'm pretty sure you and most mothers would never do anything intentionally that would derail. But sometimes, man, our desire to love our kids, the way we love them sometimes creates frustration. So I have two daughters. And because I grew up without parents, and because I grew up around some circumstances in my life that I didn't want them exposed to, I didn't bring them to Indianapolis a lot, right? And when I did, we all stayed in a hotel. I wouldn't let them stay at anybody's house whatsoever. I didn't care. I didn't care how people felt about it. And I talked about some of my own childhood and experiences and frustrations that I had. So because I didn't bring them around, and when I did, I hovered over them. They heard me talk about my negative experiences, but I didn't talk about a lot of my good experiences, right? They was like, Dad, I don't want to go to Indianapolis. I don't want to go there. Like, why would you want me to go there? All this stuff is bad and that. And I was like, and then now they're adults. And when I was here working, I wanted them to come. Be like, man, I'm not coming there. Why would I go there? Dad, you don't even like being there. And I realized, I was like, man, I took all my hurt because I was trying to shelter them and protect them. But maybe I overdid it. And I put on them all of my pain. And so now they grew up with this thing, like, as if they experienced it. You know what I mean? Like, they, and I look back and I go, man, why, how come I couldn't see that? How come I couldn't see that what I was doing was going to affect them later in life, that when I did come here and I needed them to come visit me and come stay when I was working here, they was like, yeah, no, I'm not coming there. And if so, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to do this and get out of here. Huh. But they're really, really close with my wife's side of the family. They're really close with their aunts, their cousins. I mean, like, super close, but not with mine. But part of that is on me. Because that's the narrative that I painted and then hovered over them. And then and other things in life, I was a super overprotective dad. Like, my daughters told me that I had no idea. They were mad at me because I wouldn't let them climb trees when they were little. And they said, Dad, because you said because we had a dress on that zipped up in the front, you were so afraid the dress was going to come down. I was like, but I was. It was one of them zipper blue jean dresses. I was like, yeah. Or I didn't want them to wear it to school. Something. I was like, afraid that little boys was going to unzip it. But they liked it. But in my mind, they didn't realize I had been exposed to something when I was five. I had done things from the time of 6 till 13 that I shouldn't have done. I had things asked to be done that I was like, yeah, no. So... But I never told that because we were too young. But as you can imagine, my actions were no. Mm-hmm. And then when they told me later, I was like, man, I didn't let you climb a tree. Well, you know why I didn't let you climb a tree? It's because I fell off a porch when I was 12 doing something I shouldn't have done and I broke my arm. So because I broke my arm,
they can't climb a tree.
Y'all can't climb a tree. Mm-hmm. As crazy as that sounds, I'm listening to it now and I go, dude. It took me 43 years to go talk to someone about all this BS that I was carrying around, not realizing how it impacted my daughters. And so both of you, here's a question for both of you. How hard was it? You touched on a little bit. How hard was it introducing a new man in your life to your sons? What was the conversation? You told me some of the challenges your son had to get used to not being number one anymore. Mm-hmm. But how do you even introduce them, knowing these are my sons, and sons have this bond with their mom in most cases daughters have daddy daughters. Daughters. Doesn't mean they don't love their moms, but a bond with a mother and his son, you know, I think most marriages end because of mother-in-law, but that's just my own personal opinion. I'm just kidding. Don't ban me, YouTube. I'm just joking.
So, you know, when I got divorced, I had no sight on entering into another marriage.
Okay.
Okay. You know, I have my play days.
Listen, you were married 7.5 years. You was with him how many years before that?
7, so total so, like 15.
I mean, come on. You entitled at the streets having a little you bit know, for a couple, so, for a year or two.
Just, you know, my children, I went to college while I was married to become a nurse. I had my children while I was in college. Went through a lot. They had a lot of health problems that required, which is also why I think my girls and my boys, we have equal relationship. Okay. My children were very sick throughout their life, so I spent a lot of time in hospitals and just things that at that age, you really can't wrap your mind around.
Okay.
But now I'm looking back like, dang, how do that? Right. But so by the time we got this divorce, my oldest son was born with a condition called periventricular leukolomacia, which is a form of CP. So by the time we divorced, he
you
was...
Realize, all due respect, I don't know what both of them are. You said like a form of CP.
Cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy.
All right. Okay. And my wife's a nurse, but yeah, she'll come home.
Cerebral palsy. And so he has spent many years, he had surgery while I was in nursing school on to have a tumor removed from his spinal cord.
Wow.
So he had gone through many years of therapies, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, 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 and therapy, and therapy. And my daughter had a heart condition. These are the twins.
You have twins.
And then my youngest son was born like a year later, and he came out with a lung condition, had a couple surgeries. And then my youngest daughter was born like 3 years later. She came out with issues. So we spent a lot of time at Raleigh Hospital. I'll just say that.
Okay.
So by the time we get to this divorce, they're still young for the most part. My youngest son is in school. The other ones are in school, but the school they're at, they're having some issues as it relates, all like one, three of them, before they were in school, they were having some issues as it related to adjusting to, my oldest son was having some speech issues. It was just some issues. The youngest one was having issues with behavior. And so, I decided after this divorce, well, I'm gonna homeschool my kids, you know, because number one, they have been in a two parent household and now that's been broken up and I'm a nurse, so I can make my hours, I can work on the weekends and I'm gonna, the last straw was when the kindergarten teacher told me my youngest son couldn't read, okay? And so, I don't know about nobody else, but you don't tell a black woman her son can't read, right? Right. She's like, I'm about to show you. Let me show you, right? So I enrolled them in homeschool, did that for just 6 years until they went back to school, but I had no intentions on going into a long-term relationship. Anybody that approach that I did have some relationships that were long-term, meaning, you know, a couple years or something, but not with an intent for a marriage or anything, because my only priority is these 5 kids.
Yeah.
And I've always told anybody and my kids that my only goal is for me to be able to raise productive, loving citizens of this world.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not for you to be a doctor. It ain't for you to be the president. It ain't for you to be the next Kobe Bryant. It ain't for you to be none of that.
Okay.
I just need you to be productive, loving, and kind. Help people, right? Other than that, how you make money and all that ain't really no big deal to me. You ain't never got to make it on TV. You ain't got to be on a stage. None of that's important. And so my focus was my children and making sure that each one of them, in the way that they needed, had love and understanding, and that they most of all learned how to love and understand themselves. So I have 2 kids that have... some learning disabilities. I have a daughter who is gay and has always been gay.
Okay.
Just these things that I've seen that were going to come to fruition, and my immediate reaction was not to make it better or change them. It was like, how do I help them understand who they are? Because in this world they're going to be in,
yeah,
it's a doggy dog world. And remember, once again, I'm thinking, I'm only going to be here till I'm 29. So
yeah,
I got to spend as many hours and days as I can so they can get all this stuff I got to get them, right?
Yeah.
So now, actually, I am engaged now.
Okay.
And just got engaged this year, well, November.
You're going to do it again?
I am going to do it again, all and right. I'm excited about doing it
okay,
again.
Listen,
I'm excited.
Bless you. Bless you.
And I could talk about introductions to other men, but I'm going to talk about the introductions to the one.
Yeah,
matters,
that's okay? all that matters. How did you
how did you get
you know, the approval of all your children, but your sons?
So what makes it special is that he did that. So they were Whoa. In on the engagement and knew that he was going to ask before I knew. To the point that he actually ended up asking before the date that he was supposed to ask. And they was like, I even went off and asked her. That ain't what we agreed upon.
Wow. So he went to your family.
Mm-hmm. My children.
Went to your children.
My children. They the only ones that matter.
Okay.
Write the passage. Ain't nobody else.
I got you. He went to your children to get approval. And did they say if he was worried that they were going to not approve?
Uh-huh.
Were you worried that one of them or two of them might not approve?
Well, I didn't know about it.
But afterwards, were you thinking, No.
I will say this, and if I want to leave today with any message to any mother, is that we do the best that we can while we're going through the stuff with what we've been given in our own lives. And it's definitely up to us to work really hard to raise our children from a place of not hurt and trauma, but from a place of love. And even if you don't go to counseling, even if you don't go to church every Sunday, if your goal is to raise and to love your children and raise them from that place, even your mistakes, God will take and make perfect, right? So this man, there was no need. When family found out about him, it's like, okay, what's this glow on you, girl? You're glowing.
Okay, this is a kid-friendly show, so I can't say where that glow comes from.
Oh, well,
That's God's glow.
Yeah, I can't handle more kids, so it ain't that type of glow. So that ain't it, right? And you know, it's just like different things you're doing and, you know, how you talk about him. You know, they're like, we knew how she talked about you. To the point that when my brothers and my uncles and my cousins, they were like, bro, we already knew about you. We didn't know who you was, but we knew you was special.
Really?
And you know, it presented in even this one, she's like, Mary, like, who you, I just found out.
She didn't tell you.
I found out when everybody else found out.
Hold on. You knew she was dating the guy, though, right?
I did.
But you didn't know that they had got to that point where she was really that far along and they cared that much.
No, I knew that it was a good, solid relationship. Like, I knew that part. Okay. And I knew that it at some point that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I knew at some point, like, I had the feeling that it was going to happen. But I just didn't know it was going to happen, like, then. And then I find out, like, when everybody else found out, I'm like, so I called her immediately. Like, so you mean to tell me? You mean just had lunch?
Yeah. So, and my sons, honestly, my children, especially my sons, were good. They were okay. They were good. They have been in a good place. Even last night, we had a little issue, and my son asked, his name is Dex, asked Dex something. Dex was like, hey, you know, I pray and all, but I got that thing for him. He said, man, that's why I love you, man. Protect my mama. He's like, that's what I'm talking about. You know, he like, let him come over here. He got this thing for you. And I'm like,
yeah.
You know, that's how they talk. So he's like, man, I ain't got to worry about my mama, right? And so,
you know what? At the end of the day, that's what a son wants.
It is. It
you
is.
Know, a son wants to know that whatever man is in my mama's life, his mother's life, you're gonna do right by her.
Yep.
You might make mistakes in life, but you ain't gonna let my mom go hungry. You ain't gonna put your hands on her, and you're gonna do everything you can to shield her from your flaws. And that when I walk out this door as her son, I'm giving you the responsibility to protect my mama.
Yep. Because
that's how I feel as a father. Like, any man that asks my daughter, I don't care if you're dating her or not. Understand, like, you accept the responsibility, right? Because that's my prized possession. And I think as a son, people feel that way. For you, so you're married.
No.
Did you get married?
I did.
All right, so we talked about you and that transition. How long did it take you? How long did it take you before you realized, ooh, this is going to be hard for him or hard for us?
it wasn't long. It didn't take that long. It started literally with just, you know, after we get married, you know, and I'm still trying to have that still same relationship with my son, and I noticed that he's pulling away from me. And then I noticed that when something is going on with my son, usually when something's going on, mama's coming in to handle that. You know what I'm saying? And so, but then my then husband is like, that's he, the whole, you're coddling him, you're not letting him do this. And I don't understand why he doesn't want to do this. So I was like, well, maybe it's because he's not that type of young man. There may be other things like that interest him outside of like the whole sports thing. You know, he likes sports, but maybe he likes art
and
more.
And that's common too. Not every not every boy want to play sports. And...
No, he liked it, but maybe his interests were, he was multifaceted. My son was, when I say that my son was a nerd, he was really a nerd.
Okay.
But he was just a little cute, little handsome, intelligent nerd who was very, very witty. And he did like sports and things like that. But, you know, for the most part, he just kind of wanted to do his own little thing. So stop pushing what you think he should be on him. And then he started getting, my son started getting in trouble in school, which was the big red flag for me, because my son was basically a straight A student. But by the time he reached high school, all that was done for. He was basically just existing. And he was in, he started getting in trouble a lot at school. And that was kind of like a wake-up call for me, because I'm like, son, you are smarter than this. What is, you know, going on? But he never would just say outright what it was. He would never, that part would never open up, you know. And at the same time, he's going through all this stuff at school. My husband is either in prison, or he's always out in the streets, or he's not doing, you know, there's friction between me and my husband. So if my son is seeing the friction between me and my husband, and like you said, boys gonna protect their mothers, he's not liking what he sees.
Right.
You know, he's not liking that. You know what I mean? And at this point, he's not big enough to do anything about it. You know what I'm saying? So he's just chilling that frustration and thing out in other areas. And but even after that, even after I got a divorce, at that point, the relationship was, our relationship was so rocky, you know, even after divorce, and when he started having his own children and things like that, it got kind of very, very rocky.
Just a reminder though, by this time you're what, 8?
When I got the divorce, I was like 33, maybe 34.
I like that. So when we talk, this is why this is my girl. You know, we come to a lot of same conclusions. We just had a different way to get there. And I like to try to like remind her, just like, so what age were you, right? Because she had her son at 14. Right. So some of these things 15. That are happening, okay, 15. It's like y'all literally like right there together. Y'all really more like brother and sister.
Brother and sister
then,
more so than mother and son. Because he literally, when I say that he was my sidekick. He was literally my sidekick. I literally would have I literally got bags of clothes. One, my bag for me and my bag for him. He in the car with me, and wherever we land, that's where we land. You know, so it was like.
Yeah, because, I mean, 15 years old, one, your baby having a baby, right?
Yes.
And that's something, you know, that's something, like, young men and young women who are watching this, like, this is a sidebar. Know that your mind does not equate your body.
Mm-hmm.
Please know that. Your body, as a young person, is capable of doing things that your mind can't process or handle. Just a sidebar. So just because you can do it, doesn't mean you're ready to. All right? Sidebar.
And that's a good sidebar, because that's the one thing that I taught both of my kids.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, so this may be something you desire physically, but maybe mentally it's a whole other ball game. And that kept, I think, I mean, my daughter doesn't have any children right now.
Yeah.
And my son does have 7, but he was literally out of school doing his own thing when he started having kids. So he at least got that part done. So I was happy about that, because even though having the baby is not the end all to be out, it definitely makes things a whole lot harder, especially if you don't know who you are and you don't love yourself to know that there are certain things that you don't have to do just to have somebody care about you or love you. So you make sure that you have a lot of self-love. And I know at that point in my life, I did it. I'd gone through my own little trauma stuff.
Yeah.
So that, I believe, had a whole impact on it too, to the point where I'm almost 48 and I'm still going through stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and still trying to heal from things like that. So, but when it came to our relationship, like we're on the mend now.
Yeah.
Which I'm so thankful for.
Yeah.
Because to me, I miss my son.
Yeah.
You know, that's again, my sidekick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So not being able to talk to him or not being able to see my grandkids, like that did, like it was traumatizing for me. But now that we're back,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying, and we're mending our relationship,
yeah,
and we're getting back to that spot. I'm really happy with that. But
I'm
happy for you. I think I had to leave here to go to Georgia and get away from everybody there. Because I really honestly believe me leaving and going and being able to literally just go figure, because keep in mind, I was here at 14.
Yeah.
I mean, at 15. So between the ages of 15 and until my daughter graduates from high school, I'm a parent. Then she's in college. So now it's like, okay, so what do I do? I don't even know who I am. What am I going to do with myself?
That's deep.
You know what I'm saying? So when I left, that was that journey. And as you can see where I am now, right?
I agree with her. Sometimes you have to leave where you leave your comfort zone, leave where you grew up, leave everybody behind in order to go find you and become the person you're meant to be. I know I did. There's no way in heck I was going to grow into Robert coming from Junie, which is my nickname, had I not left here. As a matter of fact, I used to hate that people even called me Robert or Rob because I was so used to living my life as Junie. Mm-hmm. Junie was all, and he it's who I am, but that's who I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. You understand? I mean, like I didn't want to be anything different. I didn't want to grow. I couldn't see that I was going to be anything other than this little smart kid who, little ghetto, rough around the edges, you know, a womanizer here and there. I didn't want kids. I didn't think I'm going to live past the age of 30, all these things, right? Here's my last question for both of you. This has been such an amazing, I mean, you have shared things that I really hope whoever watches this podcast later, that it blesses you and know that, you know, having kids and getting divorced is not the end all be all. You can still find love and you can still have healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. Having kids that have medical challenges only means that God equipped you for, and that might be the reason God chose you for your profession as a, when your parents, your mom passed away and your aunts at such a young age, like he was equipping you for what you would need to do. And then you having a child at 15 and be like, I got to go figure this thing called life out, and being able to go and say, okay, we're going to grow together, but I'm learning as I go. I'm building the car as I drive it in life. And you're my passenger. I promise you I'm going to do my best to get you there. Mm-hmm. I do. I hope people, when they watch this podcast, understand the messages that you gave. Because like y'all gave some very honest answers. I told you, I've never, ever heard a woman say, especially a woman who raised a son by herself at some point, go, man, you know what? I didn't get it right. I tried, great intentions, but I didn't get it right. Like I've never heard that. And probably, I don't know if there's fathers that go and say, I got it wrong too. Like just parents in general, but we can have the greatest intentions and not realize the damage that we create by trying to shield them from our trauma or overcompensate for what we didn't have. And in my case, I was doing both. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it was some things I had to learn that's painful. But here's my last question for both of you. I like to ask this on my show. If you can go back to the 10-year-old you and the 14-year-old you, right before those life-changing events or right after, what would you tell yourself?
So I'm going to always give credit to my grandmother. I love my grandma.
Okay.
And my grandma loves me.
Okay.
And my grandfather loved us. And I always tell everybody, if a person just experiences love, so even regardless of what they're going through, they got to just experience one person that will love them unconditionally,
yeah,
their whole life will change. In hindsight, though, I would tell the 10-year-old me that nobody is going to tell you not to carry around the shame and the guilt, even if you have the love. So we can be loved.
Yeah.
But we're not taught to release and not carry that shame and the guilt. And the shame and the guilt is what guides our decisions. Not the lack of love. Ooh. It's the addition of shame and guilt that we are carrying in our souls, in our minds, in our actions that is never let go. So that's what I would tell my 10-year-old self.
Angelita, you preaching, though.
I would tell my 14-year-old self, girl, don't you dare. Don't do it. But if I did tell myself that, then I wouldn't have my son.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And even though maybe I didn't get all of it right, I got some right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I got some right. He does what he got to do for his kids.
Yeah.
He's productive, and he's still a caring, thoughtful person.
Yeah.
He's in our rekindling. He's literally, that's the kid I know. That's who I remember. You know, can still be a little rough around the edges, but
it's all right.
We're working on it.
I'm 53, and I promise you, this thing that y'all see in front of y'all is only one side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally tell people that it's real talk. It's a don't let my corporate suit fool you.
Oh, I say that often.
Because I have four personalities. I have four roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I have names for them. So
you might want to be careful with that.
I have four roles.
You might get diagnosed.
I diagnose myself.
Dissociative personality.
I got four roles. And really, they show up in different roles and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
There is Junie. Right, mm-hmm. That's who I am. That's what my family knows. I'm still him. There's Robert. That's who my wife and my daughters know. They don't know Junie, right? They didn't grow up with him. They didn't have to experience the pain and the trauma that comes with being Junie. They know Robert, the provider, the protector. There's Rob. That's corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in corporate America and I'm in the boardroom, you know, they can call me Robert, but they definitely don't know Junie. But I'm identified as Rob. I'm Rob L. Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this other dude that'd be like, listen, if you mess with any of the three,
I have something that you need to
right.
see.
I'm
there for you.
If you touch the other three, I'm going to come see you.
Yeah,
so,
I'm going to be a bastard.
Let's just hope he never, ever, ever, ever has to come out. But even he is there with love.
Yeah,
right. Listen, go ahead.
Can I just, but the one thing I would tell my 14-year-old self is that, the love that you're looking for is actually inside of you. You just got to find it.
That's what I was waiting on.
You got to find it, because there's nothing that's going to happen externally that's going to give you the love that you're looking for. So the love that you're seeking and all these other different things is surface level. And it's probably not even love. It's something that's masked as love. But the true love is going to come from inside you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can finish off that one. Listen, ladies, Angelita, Amanda, first of all, I know it's cold in this room. I don't know why the air just did not want to cut on the heat. I know we had to work out the last minute recordings. It has been a journey trying to put this podcast together. But I just got to tell you both, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And before we leave, is social media, you guys also, do you want to share anything in social media? If not, any tidbits you want to give to the listeners before we sign off? future husband? You want to say anything? Kids, sons, daughters?
They all know I love them. But if I'm going to say anything before I go, I'm going to say, you know, we need to love each other more. We have spent too much time focused on things that we have been conditioned to focus on that are literally tearing our community and our homes apart. Awesome. And if we can just go back to the basics, love you, you love me, we get a lot further. We arguing, we fussing, and we up in roars about things that don't matter. We can't take the cars, the people, the shoes, the clothes, the houses. We can't take none of it with us. None of it. And at some point, especially in the Black community, we should get tired of only seeing each other at weddings and funerals.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I can't say nothing else. Well, listen, I'm about to wrap this up. I've had a great show, a great host. I want to thank my cousin Gail, who's producing this behind the scenes. I want to thank my guests, Amanda and Angelita, for a wonderful show. And thank you for tuning in. Remember to like and subscribe and share. Hit that bell button so you can stay abreast of the latest content. And I'll see you again on the next time on the In His Voice podcast. See you later.
Yeah. Hey.